Bonjour, and welcome to the Amateur Detective Club. This club is exactly how it sounds. A bunch of amateurs talking about their favorite mysteries. So if you encounter a real mystery or a murder, contact the proper authorities. Do not come to us. We do not know what we are doing. But enjoy the program. Allons-y. Let us begin.
I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to order. My name is Tristan Miller, the sleepy sleuth today.
Ooh, I'm Melissa Maley, the spy.
I'm Tyler Riley, copping a nap.
Oh, today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/ADCpod and browse the unmatched selections of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/ADCpod. And the book we're recommending this week is the novel on which this episode is based, Death on the Nile.
By Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
If you can believe it.
Oh. This is not like the gritty prequel to Frasier.
No, that's Death on the Niles.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. For God's sakes, Niles.
Quick question, though. In that opener, did you almost go Cosby and catch yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. You always gotta catch yourself going Cosby. Never go full Cosby.
Never go full Cosby.
Never go to full Cosby.
You know, that's not bad.
And the
bad.
Children, and the chocolate cake, and the goo.
You see, you can get a free audiobook if you go to thedonaldtrial.com. Speaking of, I watched Black Dynamite, the entire series, on available
the
on HBO
series?
Max. Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Yes.
As we all share an HBO Max account, Melissa, now you have no excuse.
Honestly.
But
okay. Yeah, fair enough. Oh my God.
But we talked about this last week as well. You have to see the movie first. We
right.
talk about this every week.
We do talk about this every week.
So what we need to do is do a watch party with the movie and then watch all of the series.
Yes.
Also, a phenomenal animated series on HBO Max is the Looney Tunes show, which is a 2014 revival of our classic Warner Brothers characters, but in a modern Los Angeles setting. It does anything BoJack Horseman does, but better.
Oh.
So no Ebony Black and the Seven Dwarves, right?
I'm so sorry.
They didn't remake those Looney Tune episodes?
No.
Is that what I meant? Okay.
No.
No blackface in 2014?
No.
Okay.
No mammy right. this time. No.
Cool.
Oh,
just checking.
When you're talking about Roger Rabbit, someone commented, is like, where'd you get your sources for, you know, the White Gloves being part of Minstrelsy? It's like,
yeah.
Number one, this is my source. Number two, I distinctly remember Bugs Bunny doing Mammy at one point and his face contorting.
Absolutely.
Into. Yeah. Like,
I thought that was when we were talking about Mickey Mouse, right?
Yeah. But it's applicable to both.
Oh, sure.
Specifically
yeah,
with
it
Bugs
was because
there's.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It was because both Bugs and Mickey were in the ending and in the parachute part of Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
And we talked about the gloves there.
And I don't think our listener is necessarily, you know, wrong. It's just, you know, I think that it evolved in meaning over time, but, you know.
She pointed out that it's for keyframe animations and making the fingers easier to see, and she's right.
Yes.
It's a double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, how can we be efficient and racist? The question white folks have always been asking themselves.
Well, mission accomplished. Look at where we are now.
Yeah,
I
right?
know, right? You love to see it, folks. You got to be happy with that. Speaking of various shades of things, how do you all take your coffee?
Great transition.
Seamless transition.
Oh, oh boy. I have been up for, I woke up earlier than I normally do. And so I am, my mind is addled by caffeine and sleep deprivation.
Yeah, we were saying some very, you know, interesting to us stuff before we started recording. So we decided to save it for the pod. And we really, really tripped into that one.
So you both come over, at least you did before the World Health Crisis. You came over a fair amount, and you would have coffee. And so let me see if I can remember what you like based off of what I've handed you. Melissa, you enjoy coffee with the almond milk. You, I think, only do almond milk. And it was vanilla flavored at the time, so you didn't require sugar. Whereas Tyler, you like 2 to 4 scoops of sugar with your coffee and actual milk, if you can get it, but I never had it.
You're not far off.
Okay.
You did
I'm in
a
the
pretty
ballpark?
Good job. Yeah, yeah. You did a pretty good job.
That is how I would take my coffee based on what you had, yes.
Okay. Well, then,
yes,
then
accurate,
I was right.
Accurate, Melissa.
Well, a boy has certain limitations.
So. No, we don't. We were very appreciative of having coffee provided.
Mm. And last week, when you were in studio with me, Tyler, I made you a latte, a cappuccino, and Melissa. Eventually, you'll have to come by and get a latte or a cappuccino.
Yes.
I highly recommend it, Melissa. So much better than Starbucks.
I love cappuccinos. I've realized that is my espresso drink. Because of the milk to coffee ratio is correct for me.
Interesting.
Latte is not, I mean, I'll drink a latte, but it's not.
Too much milk?
It's too much milk.
But you won't drink a latte then?
Uh-huh, exactly. So in a regular coffee situation, I take hot coffee with non-dairy milk. It doesn't really matter to me which kind, usually almond or oat, depending. And 2 Splendas. I've really become accustomed to Splenda.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it won't.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's unsweetened. Non-dairy milk is what I like. So if it's a sweetened non-dairy milk like Tristan had, then I won't. Then I'll drink it a little bit more bitter, I guess, because it has a little bit of a sweetener in it. So I won't use a sweetener because I try not to do sugar in my coffee. I try not to, like, I reserve my sugar for the, you know, actual desserts that I eat. You know what I mean, though? Like, if I'm going to have sugar, I want it to be in a cookie or in a piece of candy. So I try not to make everything else as sweet. Whereas iced coffee, I will drink with a ton of non-dairy milk and 3 Splendas. Yes.
I can't get on the Splenda thing. I'm sorry. I've never been... I stopped putting sugar in my coffee about two or three years ago because I think we talked about this when we were talking about baking. Like, if you put a pan of brownies in front of me, half of them will be gone in like an hour. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an issue. So I'm like, okay, where can I cut corners? And I've since stopped getting sweetened almond milk. I never liked it. My ex did because she's a coward. Vis-a-vis the bitterness of coffee.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, whereas, like, if you get a good... Why is it that any cafe has the worst coffee? Because it's always so bitter, and the blend is just awful, and it's never smooth, at least in Brooklyn and in the places I've been. Like, McDonald's coffee is a lot of the times just better. But going back to the latte thing that I've made, the espresso that I have is the David Lynch blend.
Mm.
And it's very smooth. There's no bitterness to it. It's very flavorful. Highly recommend. It's from Allegro Coffee.
I'd be willing to try that without sweetener, but I have a very high or low tolerance for bitter flavor. Mm. It's not that I won't eat something or drink something that's bitter. It's that I need to counteract it. Like, if you give me arugula in a salad, there better be, like, some cranberries or pears or clementines on my salad.
Bitter?
Oh, yes.
Interesting.
It is widely considered bitter from my understanding.
What about salt and vinegar chips?
You know, I just don't like them.
Oh, I'll eat an entire bag. What about salt and pepper chips?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tyler, what kind of coffee do you, when you're not at my home, drink?
You know, I like my coffee like I've liked most of the people I date. Tall, light, sweet, and 100% Colombian.
Some milk and sugar.
You love to see a classic.
Yeah, I prefer creamer. Like, I like some thickness. Mm,
creamer? Oh, no.
Yikes. Ew.
Nasty.
I'm glad, Melissa, you reacted because I almost continued. It would not have been good for anybody.
Sometimes you get a no, thank you, instead of a yes.
And yeah. I try my best, but there's a line. When I can't get non-dairy milk, I would rather have some sort of a creamer because I need less of it.
Yes.
Yes, that's fair.
There's nothing better than a gas station or a 7-Eleven cup of coffee with French vanilla creamer in it. It is the best coffee I've ever had.
Yes, and I do drink iced coffee in almost all weather, but there are a few months out of the year that I do not drink iced coffee.
I have in my fridge right now, I have no idea why I made these, because I was like, oh, this would be good for iced coffee, and then I'm not going to make iced coffee for months. Because it'll be like 80 degrees out, and in the morning, I have to have it warm. Otherwise, it just really churns my stomach. I don't know. But I have in my freezer right now, I have espresso ice cubes.
Oh.
So if you want an iced latte, all you need to do is drop a couple of those sons of guns in a cold glass of almond milk, mason jar full of almond milk, and you wait.
Sounds great.
And time and God will help you out. And it'll be...
And science, too.
Yeah. I don't believe in that, but sure. We have our differences here.
Oh, yeah.
On the program.
We really hate science on this podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think my cup of coffee is about like 2/3 coffee, 1/3 almond milk. And if not, I've had over, there's a cafe and they don't have almond milk because apparently it's bad for the environment. And I don't, what isn't?
Oh, which one? The one on... 24th Avenue
Roasters, whatever it is.
Roasters.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. I asked for almond milk there once and they looked at me like I was the devil.
Yeah, they have cashew milk, Gesundheit, and it's good. It's really, it's better than almond milk.
Oh,
but
yes.
The like bodega and the store I go to doesn't have it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I actually
prefer the woes.
I really like cashew milk. It's harder to find. But if you're making, you know, like an instant mac and cheese with a non-dairy milk, you don't want almond milk.
No, it's too sweet.
It's, yeah, it tastes weird. But cashew milk, because cashew is used for non-dairy cheeses, for vegan cheese.
Oh.
It's much better.
Maybe in the cheese.
Yeah, so if you're making like a Kraft or a Annie's mac and cheese out of the powder, with a non-dairy milk, you want to use cashew. Pro tip, oat's not bad either.
And the only reason I add the milk at all is because of the fact that the consistency changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas, like, I have no problem drinking coffee black. I just, like, want it thicker. I like my coffee like I like my partner's, thick and creamy.
Thank you and so much. Talking about your partners on the pod, yeah? No?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. A couple of slim, thick hotties.
That's right.
Talking about Poirot.
That should have been the tagline.
Yeah. I'm going to change the iTunes description.
Just, please do.
Bunch of slim, thick hotties talking about Agatha Christie.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. But yes, it actually took me a while to fully realize it was Emily Blunt.
Oh, right, because we were going to record this last week, and I said, oh, yeah, she's in the credits, and you and Tyler were like, oh, we both skipped it, and that's why you don't remember that first scene, because that's the credit scene.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the scene over the credits.
I remember the opening, because I remember they open, and they're, like, getting it in. That's what's happening. They're not just lying in bed. Yeah. That's why I said it was an interesting on the opening scene. It wasn't that I missed it. It was because they were doing a lot more.
I was trying to be polite.
There you go.
And there's like this weird 1930s song playing over it. It's very.
It's a Noel Coward song, Mad About the Boy. Noel Coward, who wrote Blithe Spirit, Hay Fever, and Et al.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of very fun songs. Beyonce Knowles Coward is a joke that I constantly think about. And I want someone to do a cover of Formation in the style of Noel Coward. Thank you very much.
I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, send it courtesy P.O. Box. Care of Tristan Miller.
There you go.
Want it on a Betamax, if you can.
Yes. So, yes, Emily Blunt is sitting with her friend and having a chat when another friend rolls in and says, oh, hello, would you give my fiancé a job? And Emily Blunt's like, okie doke. And she's like, I guess let's meet him. And she's like, well, actually, he's here. And so her fiancé comes in, and then we get basically a year-ish jump to a party, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three months later. There's a couple of things that are mentioned that pay off later in these scenes.
Oh, okay.
One, her friend, Emily Blunt, is... how we're going to refer to this character, even though she's very important to the plot. Emily Blunt infers that her friend is hooking up with a character whose name I can't remember, Curly Hair Mustache Man.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, no, not at all. We're just very good friends. Also, his mother is overbearing. And then also when they meet, when Emily Blunt meets fiancé, there's like a push in, and she's like, well, isn't this lovely? And at what point, I think also during this scene, and this is just the personal thing I wanted to talk about, she goes, what? And it's so funny. Because it's just so flat. What? It's like Skeletor. W-A-T. What? Aflac. But yes, then it's 3 months later, and they're at a party in Egypt.
No, okay. Yeah, I suppose it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. So Poirot shows up at this party because of course he does.
Yes. Yes. And Curly Hair Mustache Man is with his mother and she goes, "Oh, it's the famous detective." And he goes, "That little rotten son of a ugly man." Just he's so rude to Poirot. He's rude to everybody.
Yeah.
It's very catty, this man.
Yeah, seriously. But, so we have Frances de la Tour in this episode, movie thing. And she is, wonderful. And she dances with Poirot and, is very into him. and it's very funny. Frances de la Tour is also famous for playing Madame Maxime in the Harry Potter movies, in which Madame Maxime, the headmistress of Beaubaton Academy.
Oh.
I can't French, so that was an attempt.
You know who also can't French?
Hmm?
Her, because she attempts to speak French constantly to Poirot.
Isn't she French?
She has a very good English accent if she's in this episode, if she's French.
Oh, I don't know.
Either way.
I don't know.
But either way, she's constantly speaking French to Poirot in that insufferable way that if you know a little,
little
bit of a language. This character.
Yeah, it's very anyway. Fun. This is a very fun.
Yeah, she's the kind of woman that would say gracias at a Mexican Mexican restaurant. Like, yes. Super hard.
Yeah.
And roll that R. She'd be saying gracias. So she's dancing with Paja, and then a drunken former fiance. What are these people's friggin' names?
Okay.
Dole, right?
Doyle?
Dyslexia strikes again.
That's all right.
Simon Doyle is the fiance, and his former fiance, Audrey looking from Twin Peaks looking woman.
Okay.
Jacqueline Onassis.
Jackie and Simon used to be affianced.
They used to be about to get married, and then Emily Blunt swooped in, and now they're
married.
Now Doyle.
Yeah.
And Simon and Emily Blunt are married.
Simon Doyle and Lynette Ridgway, played by Emily Blunt, are married now. So Jackie is also here and is just constantly, this woman is stalking them and it's not a good look, but I also, in a weird way, applaud her dedication.
Not even in a weird way. I was all for it. Like, ruin any chance at happiness these two people have.
Yeah, I was really kind of on her side most of this. And yeah, she just constantly turns up. She's like, listen, it is, it's a party. I have as much right to be here as you do. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to occasionally creep in and say how you stole my fiance.
And honeymoon, because that was her honeymoon location. Like, how tacky could Lynette be?
Yes. Yeah. It's really good. Oh, gosh. It's
very funny. And she's more hammered than any Bostonian at watching a Sox game. She is just drinking like a fish.
What a
constantly.
Pull.
What?
I said, what a pull.
Thank you. I think about how drunk the East Coast, specifically Boston, is a lot. Anyway.
If you can excuse racism, you'll love Boston.
Have you ever wanted to be racist yet not efficient as a white person? Was that on the pod? Was that on mic? I don't remember. Anyway, she shows up. She's drunk and yelling, and she makes a scene, and we're slowly introduced to all the characters. There's an older woman and her cousin who's kind of taking care of her. And the older woman is absolutely insufferable. And her cousin is like this very lovely young woman.
Yeah.
So nice. So they're all there at this party. Jackie makes a fool of herself. Then Poirot goes to have a smoke in the garden, and he discusses with the daughter of the very forceful French woman how insufferable her mother is. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then Emily Blunt comes up and goes, what can you do about Jackie being here? And he's like, I'm not muscle. She has every right to be here. What are you talking about? She's like, well, you saw how nuts she is. And she's like, there's nothing legally I can do. I don't know. He literally says, Poirot says, no. Like 5 times in this episode. And it's chef's kiss, so good.
Yeah, it is. Lynette Ridgway is really quite a jerk. And Poirot doesn't want to work with a jerk. He's like, listen, I'm not, this isn't what I do, and also, I don't like you.
Yeah.
I think what you did was awful, so.
I do not want to work with a jerk and a bad wig. Just the worst wig. Like, even Orlando Bloom in Lord of the Rings is like, come on.
Hey, you watch yourself.
It's got a bad wig.
It
I'm sorry.
It worked for people. Specifically me.
So then Jackie comes up to Poirot and is like, or they have a conversation. They're smoking and talking. And Jackie says, I just wish I could put a gun into her head and shoot her. A man's in a bush. Oh, no.
Like,
and then they we cut
he
to
says
that cruise.
It to Poirot. Like, and she says,
yeah,
she's not. It, gosh, it is. It's one of those things where were she not to later turn up dead. Spoiler.
Emily Blunt. That is.
Yeah, of course. That like it would just be like
no Lynette Ridgway.
Right. Emily Blunt is very much alive. Thank you.
Isn't she married to someone?
John
also?
Krasinski.
That's mm-hmm. what I thought. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is very cute.
Yeah, it's very nice. They have a very quiet place.
Oh, come on. But yeah, she has this conversation full on with Poirot.
Right.
And she pulls out a gun and shows that she has a gun.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I've thought about shooting them, but I think it's much better to just make them suffer.
And it's like, yes, let's go with that thought and don't take it any further.
Correct. And then we are on a cruise line.
Yeah, we're boarding the boat. Don't leave out the racism.
Yeah. And Mr. Simon Doyle has said, made a big stink about how they're staying at the hotel, so Jackie can't possibly find them on this cruise line.
Oh, yeah, they're boarding the boat, and everyone's freaking out about the natives.
Yeah.
Handling their luggage.
Oh,
and everyone's being real, like, jagwads to these workers who are just doing their job.
Yes. And at one point, maybe it's in the party scene or maybe it's a dinner scene later, someone says, after all we've done for them, you think that they would appear better. And I was like, dang, that is, like, more advert.
Oh, we didn't even overt. We didn't even talk about the moment where they literally say, in reference to these people, that they don't wash.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's insane.
And I understand like it being a reflection of the ties, but I'm like, criminy.
Yeah, like,
good grief.
You didn't have to go that hard. Somebody was caught up in their feelings writing this script.
There's a dinner where Poirot is...
But before that, we get a reveal is what I was trying to...
Okay.
We get the reveal that Jacqueline's on the boat, but now we can go to dinner.
Sure. Yes, because Doyle makes a big stink of like, she'll never find us here. And then she's like, oh, is it the smashing? I thought you were at the hotel, darling.
It's a great shot, like, where she, it's like, it's, like, totally, like, that, I don't even know how to describe it, but she has, like, the giant magazine in front of her face.
It reminds me of The Parent Trap, weirdly.
Yeah.
Yeah, with her in a big hat and a magazine. And so
Jacqueline so she has the magazine
there.
Up, and Lynette and... what's his nuts?
Simon.
We're like, oh, and this is so wonderful and nothing could go wrong. And then the magazine goes down and she's like, darlings.
It's so good.
What are the odds of us being on the same boat?
And Poirot is there. And also some comment is made of like, hey, why are you here? He's like, well, I made my plans in advance. And that's the only way to get anything done. Which is very, very good writing.
Yeah.
And for reasons
it's also
later.
At this point, right, where Lynette goes up to Poirot and it's like, see, you could have stopped all this. It's like, she's on a boat. Like, at this moment, she's just sitting reading a magazine. Like,
absolutely.
Team Jackie.
Can I tell
honestly.
You?
Honestly.
Also, I was watching this episode, and I had an old podcast called Elevator Pitch, where we'd make up fake movies. And at one point, I pitched a gritty reboot of Gilligan's Island where there's been a murder on a boat. And we have to figure out. And I was like watching it. I was like, ding, dang it.
Yeah.
Agatha already Christie's happened. Already got here, which makes sense.
There are no new ideas.
No. So then we have this dinner where the another older woman and Mustache Curlyman, his mother, and he are like, who is everybody on the boat, Poirot? Just so there's context for the audience.
Oh, bless it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Thank you. Please do remind us.
Yeah. So I'm a bit fuzzy on some of the names, but we have the aforementioned cousin and older cousin from America.
Mm-hmm.
We have the mother and daughter from England who the mother keeps flirting with Poirot. We have another older woman and Mustache Curlyman with whom we are speaking. We have Dr. Leisner, a Austrian, who they are bigoted,
yes, you're right.
bigoted against immediately. We have a young man who has a beard who is instantly clocked as a socialist.
Yes. Oh, what's his name? I loved
like,
him.
Yeah, same. He's like Reynolds or something like that.
Yeah.
And then we have...
Did we talk about Oedipus yet? And his mom?
Yes, that's Mustache Curlyman.
Oh, yes, sorry.
All good. They have a very strange relationship, shall we say.
We can say more than that, but we'll get to it.
Yeah. And then we have... Lynette and Lynette's financier who happened to bump into them who lives from New York. He's from New York and he happens to be in like bumped into him like in Cairo or something. Then of course we have the Doyles and Jackie. So that's everybody.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Which is such a great scene.
Everybody we care about.
Yes. There's also, like, the captain of the boat, who's kind of a reoccurring character in this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But God bless whoever wrote the screenplay of giving us that. Because yeah. It's just like, okay, we definitely need context for these people.
I believe next we're on our first excursion on land. Like, we mm-hmm. dock and we walk around Egypt a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're looking at some big sculptures. What are they called?
Sphinxes?
Yeah, like...
A sphinx? That's what they're looking at?
Ruins. I don't know if they're...
Yeah, around. They're definitely looking at, like, sculptures. And I think there is, like, a sphinx-like one, but it isn't, like, the sphinx.
Right.
No, it's not the big one that we all think of.
But, yeah, so they have some of those. And there's also a temple. And so Lynette and Simon go off one way, and... Of course, rounding the corner comes our girl Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
And Poirot sees this go down through his like magnifying cane thing.
Because he is a busybody.
He is. Like, Poirot stay trying to make us believe that he's not down for the drama. But he's always around for it, ain't he? And he can't leave well enough alone sometimes.
He loves the tea.
He does.
Actually, he doesn't, as we found out a couple episodes ago. He does not like tea.
But what is tisane, if not tea?
Ooh, I don't know what a tisane is.
Tisane is, like, more herbs and whatnot.
Seven herbs and spices.
So it's like an herbal tea. Poirot just doesn't like Earl Grey.
Yeah. and I have to make the distinction, especially if Michael Reese is still listening, because he is an aficionado of tea, my good friend who has made his way through our whole catalog. And he, yes, so he made the distinction for me. Things like Earl Grey and oolong and that kind of things, those are tea. Whereas if you get like a chamomile, that's a tisane and it's not actually tea. It's an herbal drink. It's a tisane. It's an what we would call
to.
Yeah, you have
my whole life.
Yeah, yeah. That was a thing that that Michael dropped on me.
I hope he helped you pick it up.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's all this. I want to also take a moment to talk about how great the costuming is in this movie. It's phenomenal. Everyone looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. All the ladies have these wide pants that I love. I love a wide pant.
Me too.
I love.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Angela Bassett flowy pants. Yes. I like to refer to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a pair that I love to wear around the home. Very comfy. They kind of look like pirate
pants.
They
best set you up nicely, don't they?
It works really well for people who have a little bit more in the hip and thigh area.
Thick thighs save lives.
Hey.
As they say.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
All I want
I'm all
is...
set.
You're doing your part.
Yep.
That's a joke from Chelsea. Anyway, I just want a thick butt and a flat stomach, and that's all I want in my life. Then I'll be happy.
Is that the key to happiness? Yeah.
I'm not even focused on my butt anymore. I just want a flat stomach.
Yeah. I hear you.
All right. So we're back.
Yeah. Let's stop talking about Donk. Yeah. What's up, Donk?
I love that.
So then we go back to the boat for a little bit, right? And then we go back on another excursion. Is anything important happen on the boat again?
Poirot and the socialist have a conversation.
They do have a conversation. Yes. What is
yes.
it?
Oh, but first, Lynette and her financier have a conversation, and Simon rolls up and disrupts it.
Mm-hmm. And he literally rolls up the paper that she's trying to sign.
Yes.
So good on you for that, Tyler. Subconsciously, you made a joke. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'd like to acknowledge my client has made a joke unintentionally. I just might be a small Southern lawyer, but I know a thing or two about humor.
Oh, Foghorn Leghorn the lawyer? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of Looney Tunes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right.
But so after that, then we get the American cousin pairing. They leave, and the socialist is like, oh, can you believe people like that? And, like, turns to Poirot, and Poirot's trying to read a book. And is like, what now? Like, already got people fussing and cussing on this boat around me at all times. I'm just here trying to read. And, like, you have not introduced yourself to me. Just starts talking at me about other people that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
For what reason? But Poirot is better than I, so he just sits there and lets it happen.
And at one point, the scruffy socialist, which is my new Twitter handle, the scruffy socialist goes, what are you even doing here, Poirot? And he goes, I am on holiday. Leave me alone. It's very good.
Yeah.
Speaking of Poirot, I watched an interview with David Suchet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so strange hearing, number one, his natural accent, and number two, how low his voice is.
Because he has that. Listen to him read audiobooks.
Yeah. But like it doesn't play. It's been ages. He reads the entire Bible if you want. My mom got it from audible.com. So
there
if you
want to
get the Bible, the entire ding dang thing.
Sure.
Read by David Suchet.
It's in the. The Bible is in public domain, right?
I would assume so, yeah.
Okay.
I think the King James is the NIV might not be, depending on the translation.
It was a really weak attempt for me to make some sort of a joke.
But it made both Tyler and I stop and go, well, wait a minute.
Yeah, because I was like, I was already thinking about, because you had mentioned David Suchet, but I was like, I'm pretty sure James Earl Jones also recorded the Bible.
He did.
Okay.
I will say this, Melissa, to your joke, to yes and it.
Okay.
The Old Testament certainly is. There. With our powers combined, we got...
We have like 65% of a joke.
We have a thought. Between the two of us, we made a thought.
Now I'm just laughing so, at myself for being dumb.
So oh, then they go on another little excursion, and Poirot is having a hard time getting up these steps that are leading from the boat to the
ruins.
And this is, yeah.
the statues.
The temple statues. The sites that they're seeing.
Yeah.
And it is at this point where the Doyles and their financier have some sort of conversation.
Yeah.
And the financier has a walking golf club, and he's like trying to whiff golf balls off top of these ruins, which is quite like disrespectful yet charming. And during this point, the wonderful American young woman, whose name I should really know because she's my favorite character, she is just so excited. She's like, "Oh, my cousin didn't need for me to be here at the going to the excursion, but she let me out of the room essentially." But I'm looking after her, and wow, have you ever seen such a sight? Poirot was like, no. I mean,
it's disturbing how much you sound like her.
I don't know if you know this, but I do good accent work, Tyler. Did you not realize I'm good at impressions? I did my Bill Cosby.
Oh, I didn't realize you had purposely put on a voice just now.
Oh, I had.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was doing her, as it were. But she's like, "Have you ever in your life seen such? Oh, wow, golly gee whiz!" But then we see her speaking with the Austrian doctor. And then then her cousin later on calls her, you know, and she's like, "Oh, I gotta go." And he goes up to Poirot and goes, "Yes, a plump girl. This is what I like." Poirot's like, "Oh, okay, buddy." And I'm like, "I'm team thick queens, but like, don't go to a stranger and go, you know what I like? A dumper. Dumped up truck smoke show."
God, does I just that, hate that
like
term.
Are you those people as well? I know I am. That like no matter what situation I'm in, like if somebody has a question or needs direction or just feels the need to make a comment, they turn to me. Does it happen to y'all?
Yeah.
No. I don't think it does, because I am one of those people who I will get uncomfortable if there's too much silence and try to fill it. So people don't tend to turn to me because I'm already talking, probably.
Yeah. Which is why you have a podcast.
Yeah. I don't know. I just...
Tristan, I think you at least like present friendly. I don't know what it is about me that people just think, "Oh, that's the person to like bother."
I think they sense the politeness off of you, and they'll be like, "He won't say jack if I say whatever." No, but can I tell you a quick story? It is very quick. I was at essentially a bodega back in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I was just buying a couple of sundry items. And then as I was checking out, this guy goes, "Can I ask you something?" And I'm like, sure, why not? And then he asked me for relationship advice. He was like, "So this girl and I have been saying," I'm like, "I don't know you, sir." And I'm like, "Do I just have one of those faces that people are like, oh, you seem like you'd be receptive?" And apparently I do, which is, to me, nuts, because I have crazy eyes.
No, you don't.
No.
Eminem has crazy eyes.
Tristan, you have kind eyes.
Oh, well, that's nice of you to say.
It's true. I get asked for directions all the time.
That's because people can tell you are from New York. And they're like, "This lady, she knows."
And also look pretty harmless.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say smart.
Oh, both. Thanks.
Both. Both is good. All three. Look like a smart, harmless New Yorker. The rarest of trifecta.
They have to disrupt you, Melissa. You're the unicorn.
Oh, that's nice.
And a New Yorker will give you directions even if they have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Oh, I've purposely given people wrong directions.
Do you really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, if
they're
too
like
good.
If they're rude, oh, I sure. will I will give you wrong directions and so be gonna... real polite about it.
You're gonna take two lefts, one more left, and then put your head up your ass.
Yeah, and I'll be adding details that just don't exist just to make it sound legit, just to really just ruin their day.
You're gonna be across from two Rite Aids.
Yes, like things like that.
Yeah.
It's next to the third Starbucks on the right, which is
we're just like you will see that Rite Aid. Like if you don't see the Rite Aid, you're in the wrong place. You don't want to be.
You're in the wrong aid.
I'm giving them the wrong aid.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. Yes, you are. Oh, oh, I love it.
So then we're back on the boat.
What?
No.
Does the thing
Another
happen
important
yet?
Thing's happened. Melissa, take it away.
Yes. So Lynette and Simon are hanging around some ruins, and a big, big, big column, a portion of a column, comes a tumbling down and almost hits Lynette in the head, but it doesn't.
And a couple things about this scene. One, there are some young people from Egypt hanging on them. And Simon says, "Get away, you little horrors," which is the rudest thing you could say, number one. Number two, after the column falls, both Curly Hair Mustache Man and Poirot run to see what's happened. And they both have mustaches and canes and are like darting about. And it is the funniest thing. Just some beautiful physical comedy from these two men. And they're both wearing hats. And it just like looks like two Charlie Chaplins going like, it's
fun.
Very good.
Very fun.
And then Jackie appears in a different part of the tomb, which is important. Meaning she didn't do it.
Oh. What I got from that was she was somewhere in there. And sort of...
No, she's across the way. She's,
oh, she's
not
across
in the same
way.
Place.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, great.
And Simon turns to Poirot and goes, "I thought," and he goes, "I know what you thought," and it's not.
And then we get back on the boat.
Back on the boat.
And they do cruise things and have some chats.
Yeah, they're playing, I believe, bridge. All in the parlor.
I remember the American Girl now. Okay, I'm there.
I thought you meant like the American Girl doll, and I'm like, we don't have time to talk about Felicity right now.
We don't, because I have way too much to say.
So they're all playing bridge, and oh, Criminy, we forgot a very important character.
Okie doke.
During one of their visits, because I think there were three of them, and during one of them, Poirot meets up with an old friend, a colonel or something. He's some military rank.
Yes.
They're old friends. He's played by the man that plays Mr. Salt in the Willy Wonka, the Charlie the Chocolate Factory with Johnny Depp. And the whole time, I'm like, where have I seen this man? Where have I seen the man? And it's that. Anyway,
why did I think...
Please?
Why did I think you were going to say Mr. Salt from Blue's Clues?
Yeah, he plays Mr. Salt. That's how I recognize his face. Paprika. With his little son, Paprika.
Oh, good grief.
Good grief. So he's there, and he's playing bridge with Simon and two other people that almost leave immediately. And Poirot gets very sweepy. Very sweepy, and he goes to bed. And then Jackie shows up and makes a cad of herself and is being very rude. Oh, and Emily Blunt is one of the other people playing bridge. And she's like,
yeah.
Which she says something that is beautiful. She like, they go back and forth a little bit. Then she stands up and she goes, "Well, I'm quite tired all of a sudden. I will be leaving."
It's so good. It's very pointed.
I'm like, I'm gonna use that.
Yeah, and it's great.
Then Mr. Salt, Colonel Salt, stands up and goes, "Yes, I think it's time for everybody to go to bed." Very British.
So and then Poirot was like, "You are not my father." Poirot puts himself to bed.
Yes.
Yes, as far as I want to do.
He's out.
He has that in common with my boyfriend, who is known to, at 8 p.m., occasionally turn to me and go, "Do I go to bed?"
Oh, that's the life, getting up at 3 a.m. and going to bed at 7 p.m. Farmer's schedule.
I never want to go to bed at 8 p.m.
So, most of them leave, except for Simon,
mm-hmm.
the scruffy socialist, and Jackie.
And doesn't then, she, the American...
Wait. Yeah, American Girl doll does come in.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Because... And then Jackie insists on ordering her some drinks. And
a gin. Big glass of gin.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, live a little. You're on a boat.
And that is essentially what she says.
There's no better place to be drunk than near a body of water you can drown in.
Speaking of the murder podcasts I listen to.
Jimmy Buffett ass.
What?
He's drunk on a boat constantly.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the murder pack. I was like, what is this? What's the sequitur there?
Maybe he was on that plane.
I mean, yeah, it's so easy to kill people on a cruise. Oof.
Yeah.
Make sure everyone likes you when you're on a cruise.
Or just don't go on a cruise.
Yeah, I'm not for a cruise, specifically now.
Mm.
Yeah, so, I've already discovered what my worst fear is, as we've discussed.
Yeah, we've
I won't get into
that.
It again. Oh, Lord.
So she makes this big stink, and then the scruffy
Jackie
socialist
does.
Is like, I'm gonna get some fresh air, and she wants the American girl, Felicity, I'm just gonna call her Felicity, the American girl doll, it's not her name, tries to leave, but Jackie won't let her, and then Jackie gets so hyped that she pulls out a gun and shoots Simon in the leg.
Yeah, she sure does.
She pulls out her gun and goes, pew!
Okay, in her defense, he said she wasn't going to do it, and she said she would, and she did.
Yeah, she warned him.
I double dog Terry.
Like, why, like, if, what, because, like, I wish I had the boldness of a much whiter man sometimes. Like,
yep.
To, like, mm-hmm. have a gun pointed at you and just be like, "You're not going to do that. You won't harm me." Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. Nothing beautiful. Like the confidence of a mediocre, white, cis, straight man.
Yeah.
And he is mediocre. Like, these women are, like, literally
I think he's quite
shooting
cute.
The club up over this mediocre man.
Yeah.
Like, the socialist is far more handsome, in my opinion.
I mm-hmm. agree with that.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, Simon's not a bad-looking dude. Like, don't misunderstand me. I think he's an attractive guy. But, like, to be shooting and following people over? Okay.
Love makes you do crazy, crazy things, Tyler.
Oof. Yes. I guess as the premise of this,
If I get that crazy, put me on a cruise.
Hey.
So... She shoots him in the leg. Then an attendant shows up.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Don't make a big fuss. Don't make a big fuss. Just tell him we were playing a game."
Yeah. And then Jackie immediately is like, "Oops."
Yeah. She drops the gun, kicks it under a chair, becomes hysterical.
Yeah. I mean, essentially what I would do if I ended up shooting someone. I'd be like, "Oh no, wait, that was a terrible idea."
You ever shot a gun?
Yes.
Great, we all have shotguns.
Okay, that's settled.
Can I tell you, this does suck. Shooting a gun is cool. I'm sorry. It owns. I'm from South Dakota.
I'd much rather use a sword.
Let me get this straight. You don't think shooting guns and throwing firecrackers at people is cool?
Okay, we didn't talk about firecrackers.
No, we did a couple of weeks ago.
I'm kidding. Ugh. Gosh. It was for the bit.
Someone once described me as a firecracker, and I'm like, I know I'm white, but I didn't realize I was ginger. So,
I can't discuss that. But I would rather shoot, like, I like a bow and arrow.
Mm.
I prefer that to shooting a gun.
I've only shot
it's
a gun.
It's just not that interesting.
Like, when the clip's empty, you know, it's just like, all right, we reload it.
Let me tell you, yeah, that's true, Tyler. I shot a 22 when I was like 8. I don't remember. I haven't shot a gun since.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, from that perspective, I understand where you're coming from. I hear it. I accept it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is very cool.
I don't think they would allow me to shoot a gun because now they have forums of like, hey, are you mentally ill? Because if so, you won't give you a firearm, which okay. only me.
No. They do not.
No, in certain places you do.
Okay, in certain places. Not, it is not that widespread yet because I rolled up without a permit and was still able and legally able to shoot a gun.
You love to see
that should not be able to happen. I have since applied for my permit and I'm still awaiting my firearms permit. But you can, in certain states, just roll up with somebody who does. Like, just roll up as a guest and shoot to your heart's content with no training, no gun safety, you know, instructions. Like, you just can just do what you will.
How do you think I've shot a gun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Insane.
The person that mentioned this was living in California, so I assume it's just California.
Okay.
Coastal elites. They sweep Jackie away to her room.
And homegirl stays with her overnight.
Yes. American girl. Home American girl. American homegirl. And then scruffy socialist goes and grabs the doctor. And the doctor says, no more monkeys jumping on the bed. I think that's the second time I made that freaking joke on the podcast. Every time there's a doctor.
It's so good every time.
Then the doctor says, wow, he got shot in the leg and the bone is broken. We got to get him to my cabin. He's lost a lot of blood. And he takes his bathrobe sash and ties it around as like a tourniquet. It's very funny because he's like, we have to tie. And he goes, you know, he ties again. And he goes, we have to take him very carefully. It's some solid comedy.
Yeah. So they take him away, not Doc McScruffins, but Scruff McGruff, the crime dog, goes back to the parlor. Yes, the socialist. He goes back to the parlor and the gun is gone.
The gun is gone. And Dr. Bessner, I believe is the doctor's actual name. Dr. Bessner, I hardly know her.
Knows Bessner.
He gives Simon a sedative to knock him out and for the pain. And then the next scene, Poirot is shaving and he is trimming his mustache and he is humming a tune.
Hmm.
And do you know what tune it is?
No.
It is the theme song. With a couple of variations, but you're going da 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 da. And he changes it just enough where you don't notice necessarily.
What a joy. I love that. That's so
beautiful.
Funny.
Beautiful.
Don't want Stan Seltzman coming after him for copyright.
Yeah, how would that even work?
I mean, if it's less than 30 seconds.
I hope I said the composer's name right.
So then Mr. Salt walks in and goes, and Poirot goes, what a beautiful day. And Mr. Salt goes, someone's been shot.
Yeah.
Salt coming in, peppering in the facts.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
He papriked his interest. there's not much time.
Spices.
Thank you, Melissa.
I saw a tweet that someone was like, white people made a huge stinking trade about spices and colonized so many places for spices only to not use them.
Yep. I have seen that before.
Just A plus. So they go to the body of Emily Blunt's character.
Lynette Ridgway.
Lynette.
Thank you, Lynette. And she's been shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And...
oh, that's reminiscent of...
the conversation.
Jackie's threat from earlier.
I
just want to take a gun and hold it right up to her head and shoot her, essentially.
Yes. Is exactly what she says. And the scorch marks, and there was no signs of struggle, so she died kind of in her sleep. But there's a J, a letter J spelled out in her own blood on the wall, very spoopy. And they're like, okay, so we should tell Monsieur Doyle, where is he? And the Austrian doctor, Dr. Bessner, I believe his name is, which, mm-hmm. by the way, is the role Russell Brand is playing in the Kenneth Branagh film.
Huh.
And I like Russell Brand generally, but I will,
we'll see.
Pete Davidson.
Is a comedian.
I would do, but would never tell a soul.
Love it.
I would take that to the grave, but I'd do it. Sorry for breaking you, Tristan.
Okay, so then Dr. Bessner says, oh, he's in my room. And then there's an awkward pause, and they're like, okay. And he goes, oh, I see you have not heard. So he was shot also in the leg.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Yeah, he's very, very calm and collected about the fact that he was also shot. It's great.
Which is what you want in a doctor.
That's true. That's
very calm, collected. And he's also Austrian, and they have a certain reputation of being calm and collected most of the time, except for that one fella. Kind of went off the rails.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess I wouldn't want a doctor to be freaked out. Can you imagine? Like, oh, I've been shot, and the doctor's like, oh my gosh.
I'm just a pediatrician. I don't know what to do here.
Panicking doctor trying to treat you. No, not that wouldn't be good, would it?
Say I'm confused. No. I don't know. turn and cough.
Now really
I'm just picturing like the doctor with the tongue compressed being like, okay, say ah. They yeah. say ah. There's like, oh, jeez.
Bleeding out.
Ugh, never seen anything like that before.
Oh. He starts patch atomsing the situation. This is not helpful.
Or he brings in a clown to calm him down. Yep.
Oh, I like the character we've developed.
Oh, the anxious doctor.
Yeah. Me as a doctor.
Right, but then we start interviewing people, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting with the American girl and the socialist.
Yes.
Because they were immediately there.
And they recount to him what they saw, essentially.
Yes. Yes. And the socialist reveals that, I mean, the socialist like reveals like everything that we saw in the scene, like no variation,
yeah.
But he also reveals that he heard later that night this loud plopping into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Can you choose a different word?
You know, like plop?
You never heard like someone's taken a plop?
No.
No.
Once again, for South Dakota. Our vernaculars are completely different.
Yeah.
Plip plop.
Ew. I don't like it. Sounds gross.
Yeah, it is. That's why I didn't like it.
That makes sense.
I do like plump as a word because it is onomatopoetic. Plump. If you slap a plump butt, kind of makes that sound. The way
okay.
Down.
Okay. Plump. I mean... All right. It took me a second to get to where your onomatopoeia was, but...
That's what I call it. Hey, baby, you want to see onomatopoeia?
You really have to go from the bottom up with that kind of a slap then to get that sound,
yeah.
I would imagine.
The only
you
way
to do
it. You
can't just go, like, right, like, you can't... Like, it's not a horizontal movement at that point. It's more of a vertical.
Mm-hmm.
I've never slapped an ass horizontally. I'll have to have a go at it.
Well, then how do you get the plump sound? We'll figure it out. We'll take a day.
We have to road test this.
This is a line of people.
Once America reopens, and if you would like to submit to having your behind slapped by the Amateur Detective Club, write to amateurdetectiveclub@gmail.com.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Melissa specifically will field all requests.
You ever slap your own butt because you're lonely? So he also reveals that he hears this splashing sound about, you know, 1:30 or something. And he goes, Poirot is quite forceful with him in this interrogation. And as he's leaving, he goes, one more question. Who are you? And he's like, what a stupid question, Poirot. You getting too warm there, buddy? He's like, no, but thank you. Then the American girl is quite sweet and very helpful and says something here. She has a question for her that I can't remember what it is. But basically, they interview everybody and a couple of people corroborate the story of the hearing a splash and a pop.
And yes.
Someone here is running on
the deck
outside of their door.
Yeah. Poirot goes into the cabin, into Lynette's cabin, and notices 2 bottles of nail polish. He makes note of the 2 bottles of nail polish. And we also get in this, I think maybe from the maid, that her necklace is gone.
Yes.
Her pearl necklace.
Yeah, Emily Blunt's pearl necklace is gone.
Yes. Very valuable.
Very valuable indeed. And also during this point, the maid is very, very... There's a maid. That's another character we forgot to introduce. Mm-hmm. There's a maid.
Because it's more than one, isn't there?
No. Just the one housekeeper, and then there are various sundry attendees.
Okay, because I know we speak to... Poirot speaks to the maid... Colonel Friend and Doyle all in the same room.
Correct. And the maid is very worked up, and she's like, he's like, you didn't see anything? And she goes, how could I possibly, unless like I wake up in the middle of the night and then I see this monster come into my room, but other than that, there's no possible way I could possibly see it other than the way I just described to you in exact detail. And Doyle's like, shut up, will you? I'll take care of you. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You won't be watching for anything. He's like, okay. Very nervous, yelly young man.
And pretty quickly after all this, the maid is discovered.
Dead.
Dead.
Because they do a search for the Poils.
Yeah.
And they're interviewing everybody. And during the course, the captain of the boat finds a revolver in the purse of the daughter with the insufferable mother.
Yes, our goth friend.
Yes, our goth friend. And who wears high-waisted pants and a short tie at one point, and I tried that out. And it's very fashionable and comfortable, and I highly recommend you try it out. Anyhow.
How Harry stylish of you.
That's a man's name, so they say. So she has a gun under his purse, but he puts it back in, and she doesn't notice. And then also they find a gun in the water, wrapped in a shawl that the insufferable American woman got as a gift. And there's a shot that's through it, suggesting it was used as a silencer. However, we go back to the room. They're looking for the Poils. They looked all over for the Poils. Mm-hmm. And they find the maid stabbed through the heart. And she's dead.
Yes. Generally what happens. Not always, but generally what happens.
Yeah. And she's
generally.
Currently what happens. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this tension between the colonel and the doctor for some reason. The doctor is like, why are you in charge of this operation? And it's like, well, the captain put me in charge of this investigation. He's like, very well, I will do what you say, but I will be very cantankerous about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why cast Russell Brand when Christoph Waltz is right there? I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, we have to reserve our opinions until we see the movie, I guess.
I mean, but like, he's actually, or like, Werner Herzog, could you imagine?
I'm sorry, did you not see Get Him to the Greek? Because if so, I don't think we'd have this conversation.
All right.
His remake of Arthur? Oh, boy.
Oh, you love to hear a Cockney accent under a German accent. But could you imagine Werner Herzog? The man has been shot in the leg, but everything is fine because he will persevere.
But perhaps the man DeLorean schedule permitted him.
Ah.
Scheduling is the thing.
I think he was done because he was dead by then. Anyway. Werner Herzog's character is dead in The Mandalorian.
Oh, yes. Okay. I thought you were talking about him dying. And I was like, what? When did he die?
Side note, there's a beautiful interview about him talking about skateboarding. I'll send it to the both of you. It's phenomenal. Anyway, so the maid is dead, which really puts a wrench in things.
Sure. Yes. She probably didn't steal the pearls.
Probably freaking not. But there's a part of a pound or a franc note in her hand. So she was obviously paid off by somebody. So she knew who done it.
Yeah, but they had to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
They were quite frank with her.
And then is it the scene with curly hair mustache man?
Probably.
I think so, yes. This is a good time for it.
So they have a frank discussion again. And he's like, all I need you to do is listen. And this snide little dingus, this insufferable little man, with this curly hair in his mustache, is like, oh, I suppose I'll know when to say, very English. And he's like, will do quite nicely. Basically, it's revealed that he is a thief, and he is responsible with Emily Blunt's character's friends, who is eyeing the poils. They do this thing where they're close friends and they steal things and they swap it out with a fake one because during the investigation, Poirot finds the real pearls. The young American delightful woman comes to her and goes, I have these pearls, but Poirot finds out they're fake. The reason that the American girl has it is that her cousin is a kleptomaniac and that is why she is there to mind her.
Okay. And we have, like, this really sensual scene of Poirot, like, nibbling on these pearls.
You have to see if they're fake or not.
No. Yeah.
I just want a gif of that, just for my own private time.
Yeah, that's fair. Definitely.
Yeah, of someone nibbling on a pearl necklace. Tyler.
Yep, I'm sure they don't make those.
Playing the home game, that's, like, 4 sexual euphemisms I've thrown in.
At least.
Four.
Several. So then Poirot is like, hey, it would behoove you if the real things just showed up, Mr. Mustache Man.
Yeah.
And he's like, ooh,
So we have a scene with this socialist gentleman and the American woman, and they're sitting together, and he is rattling off and being a bit insufferable, and she's being timid as she is wont to be. And he's like, you know what? We should get married. And she's like, what? No, thank you.
Yeah.
And but like, you know, there is a certain tension behind it, though.
Yes. Yeah. And it's overheard by Poirot and the Colonel. And at some point I was like, this is a real Leia and Han moment. And she at some point, I'm like, all she needs to say is scruffy. And she calls him scruffy. And I was like, it's just that scene from Empire Strikes Back. It's just could be perceived as the lady protesting too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, it seems genuine.
Yeah. It's cute. It's kind of cute and weird and funny.
Yeah. And then the scruffy socialist goes to the cousin and goes, well, I've asked your cousin to marry me, and she said no, and but I want to do it anyway. What do you say? And she's like, absolutely not. And he's like, what's wrong with me? And she goes, social standing. Then Poirot rolls up because he's found out something about the socialist, that he is of, he's a duke or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah,
turned communist at Oxford.
Yeah.
And
sounds about right.
Yeah. And so he finds that out during his investigation, and he tells that to the cousin, and the cousin, basically her hair lights on fire and she's like, oh no.
Wait, yeah. He turned communist at Oxford?
Yeah. So
come on.
Marxist my words, that's what happened. You gotta seize the means of deduction, and we have to continue our investigation.
Simon now wants to see Jackie, and Poirot facilitates that whole bit, and she's like, I'm so sorry, and they like chat, and he leaves.
Yeah.
As he leaves, he comes across our goth friend again, who just had an argument with her mother over her drinking.
Yes, because he figures that out. Because there's also an earlier scene with her mother where she is like falling down and she's like, oh, I don't quite have my sea legs.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, okay, wink.
Yeah.
And yes, Tyler, do you want to take away the rest of the scene or do you need someone else to cover it?
I thought that was that of that bit. No?
No.
Do we? Well, oh, is this when we find out about the plop?
Yes.
Okay.
The plop hole, if you will. The gaping plop hole in.
Yeah, I will fill your plop hole with this tidbit of information. Which is like her drinking has been so excessive that during the night, to save her mother of embarrassment, she like gathered all the bottles that she could find in their room that were like hidden.
Yeah.
And tossed them overboard.
Mm-hmm.
She did at night to save her and her mother from embarrassment, but she needed to get the alcohol out of the room to get her mother together.
Yes. And her mother started drinking because she's an author. And her books stopped doing well.
You could have just stopped and said she started drinking because she's an author.
Truly.
Oh, I quite like that.
Author, she only knew.
I was, twas a dark and stormy night.
I mean, not hashtag not all authors, but, you know.
Yeah, some of them are sober, and that's all they write about.
That's fun.
Thanks. Yes. Looking at you, Mark Maron.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, taking shots at Mark Maron. He's fine. He's not, actually. He's quite a tragedy has occurred to his life, but financially and whatever, he's fine. He has a career. Anyway,
we're talking to Francis de la Tour in a room and having a whole big conversation interview with her. And then from another room.
Go ahead.
Yeah, in the room of Simon Doyle.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're speaking with Simon and then she runs in.
That's right, yes. And they have a whole big conversation with her.
She's like, I saw the person. I know what happened. And they're like, well, who is it? And she goes, oh, didn't I say? And then she gets shot in the head.
She sure does. Someone from another room shoots her as she's talking to everyone. Bold. Yes.
And it's the financier's gun that was used. And Poirot confronts the financier. And the financier has been cooking the books and has gotten in a lot of trouble and needed her to sign something so that implicates him as well.
Oh, yes.
And it's now it is time for an ad break.
Mm-hmm.
so much for listening to Amateur Detective Club here on WNYC. You can find us at Scavengers Network. You can go to scavengersnetwork.com. Check out all the fine podcasts there. Also, they've been streaming some video games, such as their Nuzlocke run, which is where you have certain rules, which is where you have certain rules to a Pokemon game that you have to abide by. You have to throw away some of the Pokemon once they die, that sort of thing, or some nonsense. I don't remember. But check it out there. You can go to teespring.com/themill, with dashes in between those words, to find our merchandise, such as mugs and shirts, pinback buttons, and stickers. I worked very hard on them. Please buy them.
You can find us on social media at ADCPod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you would like to reach out to us about our
butt-slapping
campaign or any other matters, oh God.
Wasn't that the button platform?
Oh, this is going to go so badly. Amateurdetectiveclub at gmail.com.
What do you get when you join Patreon? Exclusive content and bonus episodes. It's me, Twitter's me on Warwick. No relation. Here to talk to you about the Amateur Detective Club's Patreon. There, for as little as $1 a month, you can receive bonus episodes and content and access to our Discord channel. Visit patreon.com/ADCPod today.
And as is legally required of me by the beautiful state of Alaska, I must say, butt soup, as per the request of Richard Gilberto. No relation.
No.
Back to the show.
So we are getting towards the reveal.
Yes.
Yes.
So rather than a parlor, they're all in Simon Goyle's. Sounds like a New Yorker trying to say girl.
Doyle.
And Simon's in a real Garfunkel when we see him this time.
Yeah, Simon Doyle.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, by the way, just a thing about Simon. He's been pretty not apologetic, but he's been accepting the remorse of Jackie very easily.
Yes.
For shooting him in the leg.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, I mean, she was mad. I get it.
And he says, like, I've behaved so badly. I'm an absolute cad.
And you know what? He's right.
Yeah. He was a real jackass.
Yeah.
Real jackass. Poirot deduces from the fact that the maid was signaling and being so loud about what she possibly could have seen that someone in that, it must have been to someone in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise she would have been able to just speak with someone normally. And Dr. Bessner is like, oh, are you accusing me? And he goes, no, because she could have spoken to you at any time. Mm-hmm. It must have been someone. And he's like, poppycock. And then...
And Tristan's going to reenact the entire scene.
Yes, she's poppycock. Absolute poppycock. And he goes, why would I couldn't possibly, my leg is gone. My God, it's
so speaking now,
cocked up, my leg.
Simon, okay, yes. Yeah. Simon is talking about how broken his leg was, yes.
Could it be any more broken?
Yeah.
And Poirot's like, aha, of course, but you had an accomplice. And basically what is shaken out was Jacqueline did not shoot Simon. She shot the couch. Simon faked it. He had he already had a cloth in his pocket with fake blood. That is the nail polish.
Yes.
And he's like, crikey, I'm in pain. Go see about the hysterical woman. And during that time, he takes off his shoes because he doesn't want no one here to know. Clip clap. And he runs up and he goes and he shoots Lynette. Ha!
Yep.
Remembered her name. It's the end of the episode and I remembered it.
You got it.
Writes the blood thing. Very creepy. Very creepy to do that. And then he runs back down, puts on his shoes, and then he has to shoot himself in his own leg. But he uses the shawl as
to muffle it.
Yeah, to muffle it. Then he throws the gun out the window. And there's an order of operations, which is very interesting here, because he shoots himself in the leg, and then he opens the window. Which I would have opened the window, shot myself in the leg, and then it would have been easier to throw the gun and the shawl.
But then the sound escapes.
Well, then I would have got caught.
Yep. So you got to think about these things before you commit a crime, Tristan.
Why I think about these things every day.
Specifically on a cruise ship, we all know.
Mm-hmm.
The cruise ship crusader. That's me.
That's
crusader.
Right.
I'll visit your holy land.
Whoa.
So he shoots himself and then he throws the revolver, and that's why Scruffy Socialist can't find it later
right.
on. And then that's
hijinks
basically...
Hijinks ensue.
Hijinks ensues, and then he... Jackie stabs the maid after they have a conference.
Yeah.
After Simon and Jackie confer, and then she stabs. And then he signals to Jackie when he goes,
Francis Delator?
Yeah. The author comes in and she goes, I know who did it. And he goes, you know. Who killed my wife? Very nice, great success.
Uh-huh.
And then Jackie pulls out a gun from the financiers. And
Jackie's got a gun.
Yes, there are two guns, to be clear.
Two guns.
Yes.
Can't lose.
Right.
And then, so she's dead, and that's basically it. And the reason he did it is because they still loved each other, and that way they got a bunch of cash.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Simon married Lynette Ridgway to get her money, and they were in cahoots the whole time, and they were going to run away together, and they were very much in love.
Because not for nothing, Lynette was just a terrible friend.
Yeah, no,
truly. Like, from the minute we meet her and the way she's talking about her other quote-unquote friends, like, Lynette was trash.
She was. So
you
she
heard
could
it here,
be...
folks.
Yeah.
You're a bad friend. You deserve to die.
I didn't say all that. I just said Lynette was trash.
Yeah. But she could be relied upon to fall into their evil trap.
Yeah.
As they're exiting the boat, debarking, Simon.
Deboating.
Mm-hmm. Simon is on a stretcher because he is, you know, there you go. Shoot himself in the leg. So he's being carried away, and both of them, of course, are going to be prosecuted, and they're never going to see each other again. And so Poirot, she says, "Can I please just give him one last kiss?" Poirot's like, "Yeah, all right, go for it."
As if he has any authority.
I don't know. I mean, you know.
Emotionally, yeah.
Right. So she goes and passionately kisses him. And does she shoot him or stab him to death?
Shoots both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoots him in the heart and her in the head. Just a bang, bang.
Head.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now,
so they don't have to face trial on the gallows.
Wow. Which was probably the inspiration for John Witherspoon, rest in peace, his hit, When Your Love Goes Bang, Bang, Bang.
So, there's a couple other things that I want to add to what you've said. What you said is absolutely correct. Number one, when he reveals to Simon that he knows, he goes, don't worry, the executioner is quite good in this part. And it's very scary and like very intimidating, very kind of not Poirot-ish. And I was like, ooh, it's very scary. And then he also has a conference with Jackie, and she admits to making up the, ooh, she saw a man in a bush thing.
Yeah.
And there's this beautiful sort of moment with kind of as a callback of like everything was premeditated, and they sort of supposed that it was a crime passionnel.
Right.
But everything was premeditated. And there's that beautiful line at the beginning of, I plan everything out in advance. Isn't that the only way to get ahead in life?
Right.
Which is beautiful. Well done. Also, when they're debarking the boat, the Austrian doctor, Dr. Bessner, and the wonderful American girl are going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful. And the socialist prince, the socialist duke, is like, womp, womp, and Poirot's like, don't worry. Plenty of fish in the sea. And like they do this like kind of one by one, like you would do at the end of church, shaking people's hands.
Uh-huh.
It was very funny, very charming. But yeah, so they both die. And the colonel is like, where'd she get that? He goes, he has a second gun. She hid it in the purse. That's where that gun came from. And he goes, you knew? And he goes, it's not as easy as that. Which is, Poirot is like this very interesting sort of like, he needs to give people kind of emotional resolution a lot of the time, which is beautiful. Because while I'm in this space talking about like the emotional kind of thing of the episode, and then we'll rate it, there's a beautiful scene between him and Jackie where he goes, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. You don't have to, you know, stalk these people, and you can let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, you know, she goes, you know, Mr. Poirot, it's, you know, love is everything. And there's a beat, beautiful moment by Suchet. He goes, well, I think about all the things I've missed out in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so sweet and somber.
Yeah.
And in that interview I was watching with Suchet, he was talking about like how as the series went on, he wanted to add more and more things like that. Mm-hmm. Because it's very clear in the book. And there's also a kind of the emotional conflict with Poirot of like he has this, you know, order and method, and he's also Catholic. And like there's a lot of conflicting emotions going on with him. Very beautiful, complicated character that they added layers to throughout the series.
Absolutely.
And that's what I have to say about that.
And Tristan, what did you think of the episode?
9.5 out of 10. I loved this both times I watched it. I knew who done it. I wanted to know how. Mm-hmm. Immediately. I was like, okay, he shot him. he shot himself in the leg. How did he? Well, actually, it wasn't that. It was like, I know it was him, and it was probably him and Jackie, but he got shot. So how did he, when did he shoot himself, or like, yada, yada, yada. So it was apparent. And I very much enjoyed it. And it had a similar thing as to last week's episode of like figuring it out as Poirot did. Mm-hmm. Each piece of evidence was handed. I'm like, okay, it's putting together and building the puzzle. And it's really well executed and well written. And going back and watching it a second time as well. Like all the foreshadowing is wonderful, because in that scene with Lynette and her friend, the friend is like trying on the pearls.
And
Lynette is like, oh, aren't you good friends? Wink, wink, with curly mustache man. And she's like, no, which we need to talk about him because we never got to it. There's this whack moment where goth lady goes to kiss him. And he goes, boy, no, you're barking up the wrong tree. And his mother goes, oh, Jimmy dear, or whatever his name is. And he goes in with his mother, which can be read in a couple of ways. Yeah. I think he's a homosexual, and he has a very strong connection with the mother, and that's the kind of like trope they're playing on. Or, Tyler, as you suggested, there's an Oedipal interpretation of that. Which, it's up to you, the viewer. Comment below, which do you think tweeted us? Is curly hair mustache man horny for his mom or men? Or both.
Oh.
But yeah, I very much enjoyed it. All the performances were pretty darn good. The accent work is a little weird for both Emily and Dr. Bessner. He's doing a very stereotypical German accent. It's, but very fine film. It ends where it begins with the Noel Coward song again. It's wonderful. It's a beautiful crane shot coming up as they both lay dying. And yeah, it's I think a very good adaptation. I'm interested to see the new one as well.
Yes. Tyler, what'd you think?
7 out of 10.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I could have cut 20 minutes out. But yeah, I had a good time. I thought the performances were like varied, but still good across the board. Oedipus bothered me. But that was fine.
And yeah. Sourpuss, is that anything?
Sorry?
Edda Sourpuss, is that anything? Because he's got a bad attitude?
Oh, okay. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Melissa?
All in favor, say aye.
I abstain.
Yeah, me too. It's a good vote. It's a good vote. When everybody abstains. I really liked this one. I think it's a really strong... I mean, Death on the Nile is many times adapted for a reason. It's we haven't read the novel yet, but it is certainly a strong story. I'm sure it's a strong novel as well. And I... Did I say 9 out of 10? Because that's
no,
what I'm giving.
No, you didn't. But...
Oh, okay. There it is. 9 out of... I'm giving this one a 9 out of 10. Many of the same reasons that Tristan cited. I really enjoyed the performances. And it was really fun seeing Emily Blunt earlier in her career. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought it was sweet, and I was very team Jackie, and like, I really, it's fun when you like the murderers, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's a really takes you on a journey. So yeah, I am looking forward, unlike many Poirot fans, I'm looking forward to the Brenna version.
But next time on Amateur Detective Club, we yes. will be discussing the series 9, episode 4, season finale, The Hollow. Poirot stumbles on the murder scene of philandering Dr. Christel in a country house as his wife standing next to him with a revolver in her hand.
Ooh.
Gun in my hand.
Gun in my left hand. Must be a suicide.
Yep.
And with that, I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to a close.
Gavel sound.
Ooh,